Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Right, hello and welcome to episode number 156 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Edward Lamb, and Sean Orford. You alright, Sean?
Yeah, I'm looking for something.
You're still going through your old photos?
Yeah, there was a photograph I wanted to show you that was relevant to today, really. I might find it.
Yeah. Well, I'll carry on, because...
You just carry on.
Because I've got nothing else to do. I've got to fill this dead out in a minute. Livingthepresent.co.uk is our website. Check it out for all the show notes and links to this week's episode, which we're talking about... What are we talking about, Sean?
We're talking about xenophobia, really.
The fear of outsiders, the outside world a little bit, loosely-ish. We don't like to make this show too political, but it's kind of a bit based on the EU referendum, which is upcoming in the UK not too long after this one goes out, and maybe by the time you listen to it, it may well have been and gone, and the world will keep spinning, whatever the result, won't it?
Yeah. But the issue that raises it, I guess, is when we're looking at the idea of the people that are massed on the other side of the Channel Tunnel that we see as being, what are they? They're kind of illegal immigrants, or...
Yeah, well, there's a bit of a fine line between that and refugees, isn't there? Well, there's not a fine line, actually. Some people are like, send us your refugees, but anyone else, bugger off. Or even that.
But maybe. It's like defining what a refugee is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, we were all immigrants at one point, weren't we?
Well, that's what I was looking for.
You got it?
Yeah.
Because that's not blood on the back, is it? Who's this chick?
She is my great-grandmother.
I'm looking at a photo, which... When will that have been
taken?
Which
1800.
Late 1800s.
She's my great-grandmother, and she's half Negro, half Chinese.
Wow.
And which people find hard to believe. You saw my brothers and sisters, you'd see that we are all... look like odd, different kind of ethnicities. But that photograph there is one of several of her and her relatives. But you have this, and this is a kind of a point for me, is that I know this stuff. I've got Negro, Chinese, Irish, and Jewish, all in kind of fairly recent generations going back.
Yeah.
And the thing is that I am mongrel, and I don't know anybody in Britain who isn't.
Yeah.
Do you know your ancestry? Do you know where you come from?
Not as well as I should do, really. No, but blonde hair, blue eyes, you know.
But that probably means that you're up the Viking end.
Yeah.
And you come from that kind of Northumbrian...
Yeah, I'm from northeast, kind of on my dad's side of the clan.
Which is where the Vikings were, isn't it?
Yeah, they hopped over and raped and pillaged and had some fun. And
some of them stayed. And now we've got Ed.
Aren't you grateful?
Well...
The benefits... See the benefits of kind of mass migration? Beautiful thing. Yeah, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, before we get too deep into this week's show, because it's going to be an interesting one, quick maths for you, Sean. I want you to divide 156 by 3.
156 by 3 is 52.
Yeah, so what does that mean? What's the significance of the number 52? How many?
If you add those together, they become 7.
Oh, there's 52 cards in a pack. There's 52 weeks in a year. So that means that we're 3 years in. 3 years of the show, blimey.
Wow.
It's a bit weird, isn't it?
And I can still do maths.
Yeah. Didn't get his iPhone out or anything, folks.
No, that's good.
Incredible. Yeah, I thought that was worthy of a little celebration. I don't know.
Yeah.
Why would we? I don't know. People celebrate birthdays. It's a bit strange when you think about
Where's the champagne?
No. I'll have some lemon water instead.
Okay. I'll join you on that. Cheers.
Cheers. Three years. Still doing it. Flipping, I can't believe it. Anyway.
Yeah.
Crack on, because we were talking about the fear of outsiders, so... Is it kind of a natural state of being to kind of fear what's over the hill or who's coming through the woods to get us and possibly take our...
I think that the idea of who do I identify with, you know, is it our family? Because if you think about nasty neighbours and the people having Asbos put on them.
Yeah. You know, they still get Asbos. They still dish those out.
They do that kind of thing.
Social behaviour order.
Yeah. But the thing is that anybody who threatens my well-being, and that might be that they threaten my food source.
Yeah, well, that's... Like, we are kind of naturally quite territorial, aren't we? And you just have to watch the average nature documentary to see that all animals are territorial.
Yeah.
In one way or another.
Yeah. Question time the other night.
Yeah.
Came from Scotland. And several of the people in the audience were fishermen, and they were saying that we need to leave the European community to stop the Spanish sending their fishing fleets up and stealing our fish.
Okay.
From our seas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Discuss.
And that's a tribal statement, isn't it? It's you know, they are someone who is of another tribe who's coming in and taking what we see as our food source.
Yeah.
You know, therefore, we're now threatened because they're not one of us, they're one of them.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, I think. It's like usness and themness. So if we vote to stay in Europe, that's because we're identifying us as an usness of Europe.
Mm.
If we vote out, then we're identifying that they are them and we're us and we're separate.
Yeah, and I take issue with this slightly because it's like, where will it end? Because I think I did see that Scottish one. I don't remember that question, actually, so maybe I switched off briefly. But I remember it, and I've heard it since, that if, kind of paradoxically, if Britain votes out of the EU, Scotland or some of the SNP ministers are then going to instantly kind of demand another go at their referendum to vote out of the UK.
Yeah.
Because they want to be in the EU.
Yeah.
But now the UK... And I'm just thinking, well, how narrow do we want to go? Because
but then, if you look at it, look at the politics. It seems to me, having lived in Wales, and Wales literally just being over the hill, that there is quite a movement in Wales to follow Scotland and to develop more of that. And we're even at a point where, when you go down to Cornwall, the Cornwall has its own flag,
yep.
And under the European Community has special status as a distinct area. So do we end up in a situation where Cornwall, Wales and Scotland decide to stay in the EU and England sits on its own outside of the EU?
Yeah, kind of, yeah, with attack from all sides, blimey. Yeah.
And then what happens if Donald Trump gets in the States and the special relationship that's supposed to be here kind of goes out the window?
It's a funny time to be alive, but... Yeah, it just kind of it's just exhausting because you just wonder how there's borders everywhere, and obviously we're a globe, we all live on planet Earth. We've kind of divided that up into countries or continents. Countries, there is a big push for devolution, and kind of so that, and I can see why, that you know, kind of local authorities wanting to control budgets and all this stuff. But even within those counties or local communities, there's like the city of Liverpool split in half, Liverpool and Everton fans. And then even between towns, you know, we live on the Wirral, you have little suburbs.
Yeah.
And then you go smaller still, then you have roads, and then you have divided up between neighbours and kind of borders and tree disputes and all that lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And then even within houses, you have different rooms, and you know, you might have a teenage daughter who, you will not come in my bedroom under any circumstance.
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
Keep out.
It's just exhausting.
Yeah.
But we are naturally territorial, aren't we? And so are we fighting in... Should we fight against that, or should we just run with it and see where it gets us?
There's a book called Demonic Males, which is worth a read. I'll put it down as my resource. But the... in Demonic Males, it talks about how males construct territory.
Yeah.
And especially when you look at the primates and chimpanzees, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But there is this version of a chimpanzee called a bonobo. They're slightly smaller than the other chimpanzees. But it's a matriarchy, and they are typified by the fact that they're not violent.
Okay.
That they live in a passive world, doesn't have that male aggression in it, which is really, really interesting. When I had the farm, if you wanted to keep rabbits off the vegetable patch, what you'd do is you'd get all the men that visited the house to pee in a pot. And then you'd use a watering can and put the male pee, water round the vegetable patch. And the male urine, as a territory marker, would stop the rabbits going on the vegetable patch. Because they'd smell it and go away.
Right? Yeah.
If you use female pee...
Because they were scared, or they just kind of respectfully, a little nod,
oh, it, the male marker, you know, not my territory, I'm going away. If you use female pee, it doesn't work.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's the male pee that does it.
Maybe we shouldn't be using toilets, because all that's going into the water supply, isn't it? And just kind of...
scaring the fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that whole idea that you have territory that you mark... If you put a rat in a cage, the first thing I'll do is go and pee in the corners to identify as its space, it's my space. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we had a dog growing up, and my dad used to take him a little sweep for a walk every night around the block just to kind of empty his system out and all that. But yeah, obviously going around the walk, he would stop quite often, mark his territory.
Yep.
And I was never scientific enough about it to kind of realise if he was marking the same spot every night.
But he would be peeing where other dogs are peeing, because another dog would come past and smell his pee and say, no, this is mine, so he'd pee on top of his pee.
Do you think he was having a little sniff for...
Yeah, yeah.
So he wasn't sniffing for a clear area to mark as his, he was...
Yeah, he was thinking, what are you doing on my territory?
He was trying to
pee on their pee.
See if his was more potent.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. So, but we do it in other ways, don't we? We don't pee on territory, we kind of might put our name on the door, or we put passwords on our computer, don't we? And that kind of thing.
And we are very territorial about things, you know, your car, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Or your car parking space. How many disputes happen in the streets because you're in my car parking space?
Yeah, we get a little bit of that, because off-road parking at our house, and it's kind of a set area where people that live in the houses that don't have driveways park, and every now and again there's a car there that doesn't belong to the area, and everyone kind of looks at
it. That's where I park. Like,
yeah, and everyone will be like, do you know whose car that is? Yeah, he's got it. And recently we've had a skip. Obviously, regular listeners will know we've been having a bit of work done at the house. And having a skip outside your house, I've become really territorial, or became, about this skip, really, because we're kind of, it's not exactly on our driveway, it's set back, so it's 50 yards from where the work's been done. So I'm kind of looking out the window, making sure there's no one putting stuff in my skip, which I paid £200 for. but yeah, all of a sudden you become everyone in the neighbourhood's best pal. Oh, is that your skip, Ed? Can I chuck a couple of things in? I'm like, can I just wait till all the blooming crap's out?
If you got it right, you would have just charged them a minimum, and then in the end the skip would have been free.
Yeah, I do consider that. Crazy. So we are naturally quite territorial, aren't we?
Think about if you go on a course. It always makes me laugh when I run the courses that we do.
Yeah.
People come along, and the first week they come along and they kind of state their claim to a seat. And then the next week they come along and they sit in the same seats.
Right.
And it really freaks them out if they come in and someone has sat in their seat. It destabilises them, because they become territorial over just a couple of weeks about a seat in a room.
Yeah, well, I found a cool article which I'll link to in the show notes on Quora.com. What characteristic of human psychology drives people to be so territorial about their aeroplane seat?
Yeah.
Which there was the top answer on it by some chap. It was hilarious, but very true. Because, I don't know, when you're on an aeroplane, the first point was how the whole process of going through an airport and getting on the flight is quite stripping you of all control. And how all we have left is this little tiny patch of space. And gosh darn dang it, we'll do everything we can to kind of protect it.
Yeah, what happens if you get on a plane or a train and you've got a ticket with a number on it and someone sat in your seat?
That's the worst, isn't it, man? It's so annoying.
That's spicy. What are you
when doing? You get in the 722 to London on the Virgin, luckily we're in Liverpool. We're at the start of the line, so we know we can spot it. But every now and again, maybe you'll make a mistake and you'll sit in the wrong chair, but someone will have to come and say, excuse me.
Yeah, we did that in Italy. We were on a train going out to Venice and sat in the wrong seat.
Yeah.
But no, we were going to Madrid.
That's not in his list.
Not last time I checked.
Just trust continents. We're in the wrong seats, and people are coming along trying to explain to us that we're in the wrong seats in a language that we couldn't understand at the time.
Oh, no, see, Yeah, that's the worst, isn't it? There's an argument going around that to vote in Europe is to be British, because we're a bigger island than people think. We're actually in the top 10 biggest islands in the world. But we're quite a smallish country. But we've always had quite an outward-looking philosophy, haven't we? Maybe not always for positive reasons.
If you think about it, it's when Europe decided to split the world up for its own benefit and created empires, ours just happened to be the biggest and the last empire.
Yeah.
So that idea that on the map of the world, it used to be pink for British, and the amount of territories that were British territories, that the idea that the sun never set on the British Empire, is what they say. The sun would always be shining somewhere on the British.
Yeah, but we talked about kind of selfishness and exploitation last week, didn't we?
And
is that coming back to haunt us a little bit, do you think?
Completely. But if you think about it, I'm just looking at historically. If you look at the waves of immigration that have happened in Britain, right? It means that none of us have a right to be here at all. You start off with the Celts and the Picts. And we're talking about, 3,000-4,000 years ago. And the Celts, who are what we would now see as the Welsh or the Cornish or the Scots. The language was Gaelic, which had different versions. But the word for a Gael in Latin is Scotty, which is why it's called Scotland. Because it was the land of the Gaels. It was Gael land. But what happens is that gradually the Angles, the Saxons, the Vikings, the Romans, the Franks, which is who were, but I can understand the Viking lot anyway, that had taken over France. They come over in 1066. But all that action is pushing the natural Celts and Picts back into the areas which were called Wales and Scotland and Ireland, as these Angles start to take over what we see as England.
Right.
Up your end, where you were born, it was Vikings, and they took the Dane Geld up there, is moving that way. So if we're going to look at who's allowed to live here, should everybody clear off so that the Welsh and the Scots can return to what was their homeland? If you look at it since the Romans, you had the Franks. In my lifetime, there was a huge wave of Caribbean immigration, and we've seen a huge wave of Asian immigration. But what's the difference between that and the Vikings and the Celts and the Franks? It's the same thing. And each time it comes, the culture changes. So the language that was spoken, that Gaelic language, is no longer normal across the bulk of Britain, because we now have this anglicised language of England. So I think that there's a kind of an arrogance, isn't it? Like the last lot that conquered somewhere and took it over, and I say this is ours, and anybody else that appears on the doorstep should be sent away because they're not one of us. But we were on the doorstep at one point.
Indeed. Looking for help and looking for someone to let us in.
Yeah.
And someone was generous enough to do it, so why aren't we the same?
Yeah.
Why don't we offer that same?
Yeah. My father's mother, that side, are Eastern European Jewish, Kuchins and Adkins, came over in the pogroms that there were in Eastern Europe as various Jewish communities were decimated. And they came over here and found safety in the island here. But it's that thing, isn't it? It's like if we could actually deconstruct our lineage, what right do any of us have to be anywhere?
Indeed. And the benefits of being open to the world and letting people in, that you'll find, you've done more travelling than I have, but the amazing thing is generally you'll find that 99.9% of people you meet are wonderful and can teach you loads.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's very rare for me travelling around the world to have found negativity.
Mm.
Yeah. I used to carry a big, I don't know how to do this, a big Bowie knife on a shoulder holster under my arm for protection. And all the time I went travelling, I only ever pulled it out once. There was someone who was being a bit aggressive. and I did pull it out, but I didn't use it. But
that's not a knife. That's a knife.
Yeah, right. That's what you know what I mean. but the thing is that the majority of people in the majority of places are friendly. You know?
Yeah, and yeah, like I say, it's the kind of that philosophy of lifelong learning that people can teach you a lot, can't they?
Yeah.
And as culture comes in.
Yeah,
man, think how many Indian restaurants there are around the place now that we all love.
Was it tikka masala as Britain's favourite food?
Yeah. But that's not something, I think that's kind of mishmash of, we created it almost in Britain. It's like you can't go to India and order
tikka masala.
Like,
yeah. What? What's that?
Yeah.
Like asking for fish and chips.
And yeah. So it's, it all kind of creates this beautiful mishmash of culture.
From your point of view, I mean, you talk about the splits in Britain. I come from the south of England.
Yeah, there's north-south divide, eh?
We're in the middle here, yeah. And one of the things I say habitually, because it's ingrained from where I came, but I use the word actually. Well, actually, and the amount of people at some point will say to me, well, actually.
Oh, well, actually.
Yeah, and take the P.
Yeah. You know,
because it's a southern
word. Pompous southern fairy.
That's right, that's the
word. Get back to where you came from. But so, you were from the east end of London, where you grew up, was it?
Well, my family came from the Elephant and Castle going out east. I was born in Brixton. I chose to change my accent.
Mm.
I was more kind of Cockney.
Yeah.
But I deliberately stopped being Cockney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, man, same with me, you know. We're on the world here, but you can either make a decision to throw on a Scouse accent or not a little bit, can't you? And I can turn it on and off when needed. Yeah. But I kind of chose to dilute it a little bit, I guess, with that snobbery
side. The funniest thing around here is there's a family where there's that come from Irish originally, but all speak with local accents, except for one of the sons decided that he wanted to be Irish. So he deliberately developed an Irish accent.
Wow.
And now he's grown up, and all his brothers and sisters speak local, and he speaks with his Irish accent. And people say to him, why are you speaking with Irish accent? He said, because I'm Irish. You know, but he deliberately
developed. Yeah, it's interesting. Well, my dad lived in Newcastle till he was 31, I guess. And he hasn't got a Geordie accent at all. And I need to ask him about that. What's going on?
The thing for me is you just said Newcastle. Whereas where I came from, it's Newcastle.
It'll be Newcastle.
Sing-song, isn't it?
Newcastle.
Yeah.
Yeah. But interestingly, Geordies say master.
Do they?
And plaster. Like my dad says plaster.
Right, yeah. Plaster and master, yeah.
But would say Newcastle.
In the south, you say elastoplast. Yeah. As in the north, you say elastoplast.
Elastoplaster, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Funny, isn't it? I don't know how to summarise this one at all.
Well, I think that the issue is we've got a set of choices here on two fronts. One is, are we going to choose to be a part of a bigger whole?
Yeah.
Which means that if we do that, we have to accept Europe as us.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've ever done that in the whole time we've been in the European community.
Right.
You know, we haven't joined their money scheme. We're always arguing with them about wanting to change the rules. So we do pretty much make it them and us now, but whether we formalise that until we withdraw from it,
yep,
is number one. But number two is, a lot of people are saying, in my earshot, listening to them talking, that if we leave the EU, then the immigrant issue will go away.
Right.
Which I don't know is necessarily true. What we might actually be losing is our protections against things like that.
Mm.
If we do. So the for us individually, it's, do we want to be a part of Europe and call that us? And what do we feel about these people that are needing help and support? Like, who do we allow in?
Yeah.
Yeah. When our ancestors arrived on this island, they might have arrived carrying swords and spears and weren't asking if it was okay. Maybe they just pushed their way in.
Mm.
You know, and things have changed a bit since then.
Yep.
Yeah, but I don't think that any of us have any real right to be here other than, okay, maybe either we were born here or we've grown up here or we've worked here and we've contributed to the wholeness of us
yep.
being here. You know, and that yeah. doesn't matter what colour you are or where you come from.
I don't know, maybe I've had an easy ride, but yeah, I was lucky enough to be born in a really safe part of the world with a kind of, you know, yeah, with a lot of tick boxes ticked, and I've kind of made the most of it, I guess. So, but I'm a naturally inclusive kind of person, and I think we do live in this kind of amazingly stable time in history. I know if you turn the news on, it might not seem like it, but the amount of military stuff going on in the world is at record low. Crime levels are still falling. Mm-hmm. We live in a really good era, and I think to turn our back on that would be a bit of a step in the wrong direction.
I think
not that the world would stop spinning now if we did vote out. I'm sure it wouldn't be as bad as some people are saying. But
if you look at places like Syria and you look at the devastation,
the folks there might not agree.
Yeah, I can understand why people don't want to be there and they want to be somewhere that they would see as safer, wherever that is. And maybe we don't put enough effort into making it right over there. And certainly there are black marketeers that are exploiting people to, you know, stick them on boats.
Yeah.
And people
drowning. Oman's still, issues that need tackling big time.
Yeah, and I think that does need to be dealt with. It could be that if you solve the problems in Syria or wherever, that people wouldn't feel this need to be here. You know, maybe the issue is about putting something into it to make it different rather than kind of banging down the hatches and hunkering down and trying to keep everybody out.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right. You got resource of the week?
I'm going to put the Demonic Males book.
Oh, yeah.
In.
Type that in, so I don't forget.
And that is an interesting read. It's a good one if you're into understanding the interactions between people, but particularly the interactions of males.
Yeah. I'm going to mention a couple. One is Michael Moore's, the documentary maker, newish film, Where to Invade Next, which is a pretty interesting look at kind of our like militaristic tendencies. But he's a fascinating chap and puts across a good point. And also, hark back to Planet Earth, that Attenborough series. Yeah. One episode in particular I remember is the Jungles episode, I'm sure, and the finale of it is this tracking a family of chimpanzee.
Was that when they cannibalised?
Yeah.
Was it a monkey they got, or was it another
chimpanzee? It got another baby chimpanzee and ripped it to shreds, but it's pretty... horrific, because chimpanzees are this friendly, kiddie-friendly, cuddly animal. But
I think those are bonobos. You see, it's the bonobos that are the friendly ones.
Yeah.
But
when you cross their path, I wouldn't want to get into the Chester Zoo chimpanzee enclosure. No. Put it that way. So check it out. Right, next week we're talking about something else, but we haven't decided what. But do send us your suggestions. liveinthepresent.co.uk. Send us an email via the contact form there. And we will, we'll bring it up and we'll talk about it in upcoming episodes.
We will.
Right.
That'll be stunning.
Should we go and get some work done, Sean?
Yeah, the sun's shining. Let's go and enjoy it.
Beautiful. Right, everyone, you take care.
See ya.
See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.